Europe is complicated. Is Armenia even in Europe? Previously in Europe, French presidential debates.
So, on April 2nd, there was an election in Armenia, and as we previously stated on this podcast a handful of times, we go by the Eurovision definition of Europe.
And no, we don't.
Excluding Australia and Israel. Australia is a recent addition.
Okay. But we can't exclude Israel but include Armenia. Well, we can. We are.
No, we can. They're very far apart.
I guess. But not anyway. Eurovision. Anyway, fine. Yeah, on this podcast, Armenia is in Europe, okay?
Yeah.
Problem solved.
Feels weird saying they're Middle East. I don't agree with that.
And also, anyway. we really like talking about elections, so
yeah,
we want to add as many countries that we're having elections as possible.
Basically, the Wikipedia list of elections happening in Europe this year had Armenia on it, so I was like, yeah, all right.
I'm sure that was highly contested in the editing.
I'll go back and it's gone.
Yeah.
Anyway, there is a parliamentary election in Armenia.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit of a big thing about this election was the fact that this was the first time they held a parliamentary election since holding a referendum on basically changing how the elections work.
Mm-hmm.
So their parliament used to be 131 seats. It's now 101.
Mm-hmm.
They used to have a system where 41 of those seats were elected by a first-past-the-post proportional a voting system, single seat constituencies, and
yes,
then 90 of the remaining seats were done by a countrywide proportional representation.
Uh-huh.
Now they got rid of that first past the post thing, and now it is just pure countrywide proportional representation of 101 seats using the de Hondt method, and you have to have a election threshold of 5% or 7% if you're a multi-party alliance. Multi-party alliances are really common in any country that has election thresholds, because that's like the only way some smaller parties can get in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that kind of made things quite easy for me, because after the election on the 2nd of April, only four parties got in, even though, like, I don't know, 12 ran. So yeah. Rather than having to go through all those parties, this is so much easier. Anyway, the party that was pretty much in power, the Republican Party, is back with the most seats, and they have a relative outright majority.
Mm-hmm.
So it's because it's proportional representation, but some people's votes don't count if they vote for a party that's too small.
Yeah.
It results in the Republican Party, led by Serge Zargnissian, with 49% of the vote, but ended up with 58 seats out of 101, which is obviously more than 50%.
Mm-hmm.
This is down from 11 seats from their last election. People are kind of generally unhappy. The Tsarukyan Alliance, which was like a further right party, there doesn't seem to be much of a left in Armenia, unfortunately. Center-right and further-right are like the lion's share of the parliament. The Tsarukyan Alliance got 31 seats, making them the second biggest party, again down two seats from where they were before. The third largest party took forever to find out what they were, but it's the Yelk Alliance, also known as Way Out. They are largely a protest kind of movement. They are a multi-party alliance. They got over 7% of the vote, obviously. They are kind of a mishmash of people who left the Republican Party for not being right-wing enough. Another party called Bright Armenia, which is center Lib Dem kind of party.
Yeah.
And another one called Civil Contract, which is a civil rights movement party within Armenia, fighting for equal rights for all sorts of minorities, genders, sexualities, that kind of thing.
Interesting. Yeah.
And then ARF, which stands for something that I can't pronounce, they are the center-right, and they were the smallest party to actually meet the 5% threshold.
Yeah, okay. I see.
They got 7 seats, and they're up 2 seats in the last one.
Hmm.
Yelk is new, so they don't have anything to compare with.
Yes, right, okay.
The other interesting thing about this election was that Serj Tankian was an observer of this election.
Remind people who Serj Tankian is.
For anyone who doesn't remember or is possibly too young to remember, because that's actually a thing now.
You sound so bitter about that.
Oh, the fact that System of a Down is an old band worries me.
They are an old band.
Yeah, I know. I know when you say it out loud. Serj Tankian is the lead singer of a new metal band, which was a genre that was around for a hot minute in the late 90s, early 2000s. Yeah, they're known for like protest, anti-war, largely anti-corruption. And notably, they were from Los Angeles and all Armenian-American. Because there is a large Armenian-American population in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Funny, where that came funny from. You sound Serj Tankian as with his like large knowledge of elections and stuff. Interesting choice.
Well, actually, I was looking it up there since the disband, like since System of Down stopped being a thing.
Yeah.
He's largely got into activism and like a lot of notable people of Armenian descent who live in America, they are a handful of them are very concerned about the direction Armenia is going in. I want to make sure that Armenia kind of transitions into this kind of liberal democracy kind of country, which is interesting. It was him, like Serj Tankian is the one I noticed, but there's other like actors and singers who are of Armenian descent who were also. They made videos in their native Armenian telling people to go vote and be on an eye out for like any kind of sign of corruption. And Serj Tankian himself did visit and was a part of the international observers of these elections, which was a big thing because this was the first vote they had since changing the voting system. People were concerned this change in the voting system might have been the power grab or
I was kind of like poll you quickly on like how like what are your thoughts on having a full of making that move of getting rid of any local specific single party member constituencies and having an all proportional representation countrywide system. Like, that to me kind of strikes me as like not like the option I would have asked for would have been to change like make multi member constituencies instead, because like I think there is definitely a value to having. I can see why people are concerned.
Yeah, so I guess
like,
well, you have to remember they didn't go from like reason, purely just, single like, seat constituencies.
You have gotten rid of any actual. Local accountability.
Yeah, but like they didn't move from purely single seat constituencies first past the post.
I guess it's more of a single step. Yeah,
but I can understand it because living here in Scotland, the Scottish election is done with the mixed member voting system, which is kind of single seat constituency, kind of, and it's not nationwide, but it's like larger region wide. kind of proportional system. And generally what happened with that was people weren't really sure what to do with the two votes. Like, do we vote same party for both? Is one of them for my second choice? Like, people weren't certain on what that was. So, I don't know. I feel
like the London Council, or, the London... council elections are quite like that. Are like that as well. You get to vote twice. You get to vote for your local councilman, but then you also get to vote for like the general London seat for like it's like your quarter of. I forget it's how it's divided up, but there's also like a more broad councillor who can be elected, which is just like I think having two layers of it is confusing and not a good system. However. If it's between that and not having any, a proportional system at all and having just single member, I'd prefer it. But I'm not sure about getting rid of it in favor of an all proportional system. That's if it's countrywide. I don't really think it's a good like it's a good voting system. I don't think it's a good representative electing system.
Yeah, it's interesting, but then at the same time we're talking about Armenia, which is a small country, like 3 million
that's
people.
True. Yeah, yeah.
And then at the same time, I'm not entirely sure. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's not like the UK where there's like clear lines in the sand where it's like, oh, you're born on this side, you're Scottish. You're born on that side, you're English.
Oh, yeah. But like we come from a not particularly bigger country, and there's still like, you know, city-country divides. There's divides between like not so much counties, but like it divides between like larger areas.
Yeah, it's an interesting
like metropolitan
one,
like, areas of the cities are quite different to lots of the rest of the country.
But I guess from our perspective, we have to remember the point of view that we come from a part of the world and then move to another part of the world that was always very much about local constituencies. That was always our voting system. Whereas, I don't know, a country like, I can't think of a country, but like Spain, I think, does purely proportional, where they're just like, oh yeah, that seems like a fair system. I mean, we're probably just coming from that perspective. And
I think, yeah, just anecdotally, you can't look at this at Spain's voting system and say it's good at the moment.
That's a fair point.
Proportional systems, yeah, cause too much gridlock. No, they don't. Look at Spain. Oh, crap.
I would have to basically, for to make a judgment call on Armenia, I'd probably have to know the...
Yes, oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
The history, because if it was this kind of thing where, like, oh, in the single seat constituencies, this one party was never getting anyone in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, they're gone now. Whoops.
Yeah, now we're going to talk briefly about, there were two reasonably major terrorist attacks in Europe, and one in Scandinavia, or in Sweden specifically, and then there was one in Russia as well, but on the, you know, mm-hmm, west part of Russia. The one in Sweden was, like, you know, very highly covered in the last couple of days. I believe it happened on Friday? Mm-hmm. Saturday?
It,
yeah,
happened on Friday.
Happened on Friday afternoon, yes, right, okay. 4 people were killed and 15 people were injured when a truck drove into pedestrians in Stockholm's shopping district, having been to Stockholm, like, yeah, that's quite, it gets dense, with the shopping area gets dense of people. It's like if you were to pick a place to target, this would be the obvious choice.
Yeah. It was Friday and at like lunchtime, so it wasn't...
Yeah, yeah, you could definitely do it on a Saturday afternoon, but, you know, the might be more difficult to organize, perhaps.
It wasn't empty, yeah.
No, yes, for sure.
Currently the driver has been, you know, arrested, and he's detained for questioning. Mm. This is actually probably the first time something like this has happened, and the driver or the attacker wasn't just killed on the scene.
No, because there was the one in there was the one at the Christmas festival or the
Christmas market
who escaped. Who made it all the way to Italy, right?
Oh, yeah.
So he was able to run away, because it was like a combination of night and like a sufficiently crowded place that it was, you know, amongst the disorder, it would be quite hard to follow an individual person disappearing through a crowd. So he was able to get away, and made it as far as Italy. But like, they'd figured out who he was from like surveillance and various things.
But the person's been detained now. The suspect's been detained. Mm-hmm. He's a 39-year-old from Uzbekistan. He was known to security services beforehand. So, yeah, we'll see on developments on that.
Mm. Yeah, it's unclear if it's in the same way that, for instance, the Westminster guy was known to security services, and that, like, known but not actively being looked at the moment kind of thing.
Yeah. So what severity they were known to the security services is still a big thing. 10 remain in hospital currently, 2 are in intensive care, and yeah, not a great thing. As far as I know, it's a relatively small attack, but this is probably one of the first ones in Sweden, or for a very long time anyway.
Yeah, it's a very big deal for Stockholm, like, in terms of the frequency of these kind of things in Sweden in general, or even Scandinavia in general.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I guess the other one was the bomb on the St. Petersburg metro.
Yes. So this happened in the tunnel in between 2 kind of major stops on the St. Petersburg metro. Mm-hmm. 11 people were killed, 45 people injured. And so the institute Russian's National Anti-Terrorist Committee said the blast hit the train between Senia Posklad and Technikolsky Institute stations.
Mm-hmm.
Dmitry Medvedev on the night of the attack said it was a terrorist attack. Another explosive device was found later and then made safe in a nearby station as well. So it could have been worse, but that was a big attack. As far as I know, the suspect for that one is still at large.
I think I might be wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure during a raid on, like, while looking for the guy, they found more explosive material. It was kind of like a seemingly quite well planned out thing overall.
Right. Yeah. And that's a severe amount of damage.
Yes.
It's a terrible place to attack. You're very isolated and trapped down in those.
Yeah, like
things.
If anyone who lives in a city with a metro or like has traveled to places, it is a very enclosed space, and there's not really anything you can do if someone's in the tunnel at the time.
No.
Yeah, it's one thing evacuating stations, it's another thing evacuating a tunnel, closed tunnel. Not much you can do about it.
Right, so we thought we'd be remiss not to mention these two attacks.
Yes, but there's like reasonably scant details overall, so we're not going to talk any further about it.
Not to mention, conventional news sources have probably given this a lot of attention.
And now we're going to talk about France again. as usual, we all talk about France and its highly publicized presidential elections. So there was another debate for the presidency. This one had 11 candidates, which, that's a lot of candidates to have in a debate. So I think it worked out that for, like, the theory is to give everyone equal time to talk, which works out as, like, 17, 18 minutes each.
Right.
Which for, like, a multi-hour television broadcast isn't really a lot of speaking time. But yeah, so it meant that, like, the answers given to things were quite broad. There was, like, quite a lot of diversity on the stage in terms of, like, opinions and stuff. But, like, due to the nature of it, like, 11 candidates and how much time everyone has to talk and kind of how, like, people's kind of positioning themselves currently in the campaign meant that, like, so Macron was quite careful by all accounts due to kind of he has some momentum, it's kind of slowing down a bit, he's not like necessarily second for sure in the polls sometimes, like in the last few days. And kind of he clashed with Le Pen a bit, but mainly the thing to watch for in these debates now is like if Le Pen will do something that'll somehow damage her current front runner in the first round standing, or if Fionn will do something that'll cause him to be like written out of second place altogether, which seems unlikely. One interesting thing about it is the far left candidate, whose name I need to re-get, Jean-Luc Mélenchon. He is making quite large gains in the polls now, to the point where there are polls that are showing that he's not particularly that far behind Fionn, who's in third, who would come in third place in a lot of those polls.
Yeah.
Kind of within striking distance if he continues to gain some more support. So he's effectively splitting the vote on the left, but kind of in more of a Hamon, the Socialist Party candidate, isn't particularly winning anyone over, really. And I guess his ties to the current Socialist Party is problematic, even though he's not really... he doesn't really share a lot of the opinions with the current administration. It's by association, party wise, we're not putting the socialists back in charge. That's not what we want. His campaign is his rallies and stuff are getting quite big. He's getting like reasonably good coverage. He's quite charismatic. Came off reasonably well in the debate, for instance. So like that's interesting, but it's not causing like a massive upset in the polls. I guess like one thing to think about is mean that Macron isn't gaining people, like disillusioned people from the left who think he's like a good kind of lesser of many evils kind of situation.
I guess the whole center-left is being split. Like, are you more center than left? Then you're probably going to go to Macron. Are you more left than center? Then you're going to go to Mélenchon.
Yeah.
Melenkant. Oh, Jesus. Which is great now that, like, he's kind of rose to the ranks, because we're now getting the opinion polls of what Melenkant would be like against in, like, the second round in, like, hypothetical setups.
Exactly, because you wouldn't run those previously because he was polling so low. Whereas now, and kind of there was like kind of undue focus being put on Amon's positioning just because he was a major party candidate, but not there was not really he wasn't in a position to take second place in any polls, so that polling was kind of somewhat unnecessary, I guess, but kind of more seemingly more plausible at the time.
It's interesting because Amon is looked. It looks like he's going to beat, if polling is to believe, he's going to beat, they only have him paired against Le Pen and Fillon, but he would beat both, which is interesting.
If he was to go one-on-one of them, is unlikely to happen.
But they haven't done him versus Macron, which would be interesting.
That would be interesting. That'd be the dream election.
So the opinion polling for Melenkant, if he does actually make it to the second round, is that he would beat both Fillon and Le Pen, but not Macron.
Yes,
Macron is beating most people he's paired against.
Kind of in the aftermath of the debate, France 2 TV, France 2, I guess, announced they're cancelling their last presidential debate. They were going to run a second one, in the same vein as the current one. However, so they're going to have it on April 20th, which would have been 3 days before the first round of voting. However, they've cancelled it because multiple candidates have said that they might not show up. And their reasoning was that they were worried that not everyone would show up, so they weren't going to show up. So it was effectively... People were complaining. Melenkant specifically was complaining about like the scheduling of the debates not being in like making it difficult to be like being so close to election day, being making it difficult to actually campaign. So they should have timed the debates better. But kind of based on that, other candidates have said, "Well, if he's not showing up, I'm not showing up," because if it was a debate between like Fillon, Le Pen, and Macron. Fillon and Le Pen kind of have things to lose. They have a lot of ongoing scandals that will get talked about, whereas Macron can come off like be cautious and come off quite reasonable. Whereas I think Fillon can't. There's only so much scandals Fillon can avoid talking about. There's only that amount of time.
Previously in Europe is produced by Hugh O'Brien and Kieran Dold. This week's song was T.C. Zena za sva vremena by Milan Dinak Dika from Bosnia-Herzegovina. If you like the podcast, please make sure to give us a review on iTunes. 5-star reviews kind of help a lot with new people finding us. And if you also like the show, please make sure to tell a friend about it. That kind of stuff does help a lot as well. Thanks for listening.